Now, what we're talking about is the EU AI laws that they're about to be brought forward. Can you tell me about what they think they are trying to control?
So the, in fact, there's two things to talk about. The first, by the way, which is very urgent, is that the Italian Data Protection Authority has just told OpenAI to suspend its operations. That's ChatGPT, not just in Italy, but involving Italian citizens' data. So effectively, there's a partial European ban on ChatGPT in place, or at least suspension. So that's already come in Friday night as a result of the European the equivalent of the Privacy Act, basically. So that might be news to you, and I think that's quite topical. But the AI Act itself is aimed at effectively at public-facing what's classed as high or medium risk AI systems that the public will be using. And so that would include ChatGPT to take one example, but it would include things like chatbots on websites and other things, as long as they're driven by algorithms, which they are. So that's what they intend to deal with in the AI Act. But of course, there is this quite strong privacy law in place in the meantime, and that's what the Italians have acted on, and indeed the French are considering acting upon as well.
It's a little bit like the cat's already out of the bag, isn't it?
Yes, and of course we're talking about kind of generic what the Europeans call horizontal law, in other words, law that applies across the board. So it's the equivalent of a consumer or competition law that would apply to all entities. But in fact, they've had laws in place for a few years that deal with things like self-driving cars and the use of AI in medical imaging and those kinds of things. And of course, you know, most of the airplanes that we get on are actually driven by various forms of AI in the way that they actually operate. So we've had sectoral rules for a few years. But this is the first really serious attempt at a horizontal rule that will run across the whole of the economy, not just those specific, obviously high-risk sectors.
Yeah, and when you say horizontally, are you talking about the concept that it's standards-based approach?
The idea is that there will have to be standards that will be set that companies will follow, because companies obviously don't want to look at this law and try to interpret it individually. They want to know that there's a particular set of audits they have to go through, or a checklist that they have to follow. So that's going to operate, and that's actually built into this particular law as it's drafted at the moment. It should be said that of course it can change. Legislation is always being changed as it's being amended in the drafting. But it looks as if standards are going to be pretty key to how it works. And of course, that will apply for the European Union, or any company that wants to do business with the European Union. And that really means it will apply to most medium and larger Australian businesses that intend to deploy anything that looks like AI.
There's been a lot of different papers or groups of people that have put papers in to inform this law. You know, they've observed certain things about it, and some of them have said things like there's not enough flexibility for future risk, for example.
So there's two really important dynamics to be aware of when you look at submissions about this law or explaining in Australia what's going on with this law in Europe. And you have to remember that, first of all, it's theatre. So the technology companies will always say that it's too rigid, it's too slow to change, it's not giving them the flexibility they need. That's a normal part of the kind of, you know, Punch and Judy show, the kind of theatre that happens when you're lobbying about laws. And the reality is that standards should be flexible enough as an approach to take to enforce the law to help this to be done. But the second thing that maybe is a bit counterintuitive when you first look at this is that this law is being introduced at European level. By the way, even if it's passed this year, which is not completely certain, it won't be enforced for a further 3 years. So we're really looking at 2027 for it actually biting. In terms of the enforcement on companies. But the important thing about this law as a European law is that it stops national governments in the European Union from applying a stricter law. So, yes, you hear these comments about, well, it's not going to be flexible enough and it's going to be very old-fashioned and so on. The reality is this law is designed to make sure that there is no single European country that will introduce a stricter law. And of course, that's because it's because the American companies are they're terrified that the Germans or the French or the Italians will introduce a stricter law. So actually, this is a tech company friendly law. I know that sounds a bit counterintuitive, but that's the reality, is that a European standard stops individual countries from introducing something which is much stricter.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because the Bristol University people say that it doesn't actually accurately recognise different kinds of harm associated with AI, or allocate responsibility for them accurately, and that it fails to ensure meaningful transparency, accountability and rights of public participation, which is quite a heavy kind of critique, isn't it?
Yeah, and if that's the refrain project at Bristol, I know the people associated with that, they're quite right. The reality is it's a really lightweight law, despite the kind of squeals of a pretend agony coming from technology companies. It's a really low bar to set for people to comply with an AI law, and it really won't give you or I as individual citizens much of a right of redress. So, you know, this is not the kind of thing that would, you know, kill the successor to RoboDebt. It's not the kind of thing that would really help us to get, you know, much better transparency in what's going on in, you know, credit ratings, you know, how our credit rating looks. So it's really a pretty thin law, despite some of the, you know, corporate claims that it's, you know, strict or in some way, you know, a law too far. It's actually a very basic thing.
So really they're just using a script, because in actual fact it's self-assessment. There's no actual mechanism for them to be to comply with the standards.
There'll be a little bit of audit required, but that will depend to a large extent on how what they call the European AI Board, which is meant to be the expert group implementing this. It depends how strictly they try to implement this. One of the problems that you always have with European law is the 27 national governments, and that means 27 regulatory agencies. So, you know, 27 offices that come to the OIAC, our privacy regulator here. And you're going to get really patchy regulation. Now, bear in mind, most of these big US tech companies, who are, after all, the leaders in this thing, most of them are based in Ireland. And the Irish regulator has a very poor record on implementing data protection law in the last several years. And it's not likely they're going to have some kind of, you know, great transformation into a super effective, super strict regulator on the AI Act. So in all honesty, that's theatrical. The reality is much more likely that there will be insufficient regulation of AI in 2027 than that somehow, you know, the sky will fall in because there's such strict regulation.
So really the importance of this act is that it's the first of its kind from a major legislative area. Brazil put something in, but other than that, there is no other sort of regulation, is there?
No, so Brazil has a proposal for regulation. The same on data protection as well. Brazil has a, you know, highly complex political and legislative system, so it's a very, very long step from the proposal for a law to the enforcement of a law. Same thing in Canada. They've been discussing this for a couple of years. China does have quite strict rules by comparison on AI, but obviously China doesn't go through the democratic checks and balances that we associate with democratic legislative systems. So the reality is that, yeah, we are at the beginning of the process. The problem that we all will face is that if this law, it almost certainly will go through, these laws tend not to be revisited certainly by the European Union, which is the biggest, let's face it, the biggest player in the kind of free trade space. They won't revisit it again for many years. So I've been warning people for a year now that if this thing goes through as a very lightweight, you know, very minimal law, we could be waiting another 20 years to actually have a more effective law that gives you or I as citizens real redress. And I'm not just saying that as a kind of, you know, Cassandra. I'm saying that because that's exactly what happened with laws to do with internet content, where a law was passed in 2000, and it's only now been revised 23 years later. So my worry is that we have an AI Act, which is passed this year, and I'll be retired by the time we have its successor, which is a shame for me, but a bigger shame for citizens who won't have the right to redress.
Because the issues around this are not just individual, but society as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, so one obvious example, facial recognition cameras, live facial recognition being used. And we know it was being used by Bunnings and by other companies last year. They actually suspended their use of them and apologized to the privacy commissioner. But the reality is that things like live facial recognition, their effect is the moment we walk out of our front door.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're dealing with chatbots on websites while we're sitting inside our homes as well. So, you know, we are going to be monitored by AI for the rest of our lives. That sounds like a depressing prospect. But that's the reality.
Just as a matter of interest, has it reached your knowledge? There was a piece of news that came out of America from some tech companies that they were going to be now using human DNA that they're culturing to insert into their experiments in AI. I mean, is that just a freak out science fiction kind of thing?
It sounds to me like the kind of thing the medical regulators will be very interested in. And in that kind of, in that regard, it is good that we do have, I mentioned earlier on, we've got these specific sectoral rules for areas like medical research. And you don't get to play around with human DNA in experimental form without going through the medical regulators. So I am going to hope that they're on top of that.
I just read that and I thought, oh my goodness, that's so freaky.
Yes, it is. And you freaked me out, actually. But thank you.
Anyway, I hadn't found anybody else who's thought about that. But And you know, it's funny because I'm relatively old. My daughter thinks that being surveilled all the time is quite normal. But I was telling her something that she, because I came from a country town, I said that I found it actually really impertinent when I was young that people in shops suddenly had to have their first name on a badge as if we were allowed to speak to them. I know that.
Yes.
I know that people think that's a really weird thing to find impertinent, but it is impertinent.
No, I agree. And I must say that we have this kind of slightly odd analysis that economists have made where they basically claim that privacy is a luxury good, that you don't have it in small villages because everyone knows what you're doing. You don't have it in large families because everyone walks into your room. And it's therefore it's something that is, you know, kind of a bit of a rich man's folly. But I'd have thought one of the fruits of advanced civilizations is that we get access to these fundamental rights and we use them. So I think the idea that we'll give them up so easily. The other thing to say is that I in actual fact, when they've done studies of, because of course most studies are always carried out on undergraduate students because they're the easiest group to actually survey. And when they've carried out studies of undergraduate students, they found that actually they value their privacy very strongly to the point that they actually spend a significant amount of time each day around obfuscation. In other words, around setting up things like dummy profiles, changing their privacy settings, doing all of those things that basically leave a false trail of digital breadcrumbs for companies. So, you know, the idea that you know, we there's a group of 20-somethings who don't value their privacy, they value it so much that they are actually trying to find alternative ways of dealing with surveillance. Because that surveillance is affecting them so deeply that it's become actually bred into their digital habits that they try to throw a trail of false digital breadcrumbs to put these surveillance companies off the scent, including companies like TikTok, which has obviously been in the news recently.
Oh, that's really interesting. Someone told me the other day that they deliberately, and have for a long time, and they're older, told everywhere that they are born at a different date, and a whole range of different things. And so she laughed and said that people are saying happy birthday to her all through the year.
Oh, the extraordinary number of people who it turns out claim to be 123 years old because they were born on the 1st of January 1900. which we know. We have lots of friends who have claimed to have a 1st of January. You know, anyone who's in doubt, check your Facebook profile, see how many of your friends have 1st of January as their date of birth. So yeah, absolutely. People have been doing this for a very long time. And people forget when Facebook was set up as a kind of creepy dating site, and you were asked to reveal your relationship status. Well, that was an invitation 15 years ago for everybody to throw out a trail of false digital breadcrumbs to Mr. Zuckerberg, because if it is impertinent to put your first name on a badge, how impertinent is it to ask you what your relationship status is just so you can share a photo on a site?
Thank you very much for talking to me.
I hope that's useful. I realize I was slightly less focused than just on the EU AI Act, but hopefully that gives
No, I think the
useful
whole thing,
background.
yeah, I think the whole thing is kind of cute, isn't it? I mean, the whole thing is cute in a terrible sort of way.
It's very complex, but actually it's a complexity that we're building into our kind of analysis of the digital world around us, isn't it?
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, my pleasure.